Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello, and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM's show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we are going to be doing a commentary for the American Dad episode, A.T., The Abusive Terrestrial.
Yep.
So people can kind of find it on Netflix and get ready while we're talking about the news, it's season 2, episode 12. So go ahead and search for that while we're talking about what's going on with Star Trek Discovery these days.
Yeah, what is going on with Star Trek Discovery?
Well, as I'm sure everyone knows, the show is being delayed from January until May. That's the big news this week. And the reason for that, and the reason why it's relevant to us, is because this was a request which was made by the filmmakers themselves, Brian Fuller and company, in order to give themselves time to actually do what they need to do in order to make this show great instead of just rushing it out there to meet a deadline.
Sure.
So I can understand that. I mean, this is the type of thing, it does happen, you know, rather frequently, you know, the instance which comes to mind off the top of my head is James Cameron with Titanic, you know.
Yeah, and that one worked out pretty well.
Yeah, it worked out very well. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's always a bummer, right? It's always a bummer because you want it now. But the end result, I think, always makes it worth it because we're going to be watching this show for much longer than 4 months. You know.
I certainly hope so.
Yeah.
If we've all given up after 4 months, that's not a good sign. Not at all.
Yes. So, you know, I mean, that's cool. I'm down with that.
No, I like the fact that this will sound like a stretch, but honestly, you know, it's cool that the show creators felt comfortable enough to go to CBS and say, look, everybody knows how high profile this is. And CBS was still willing to say, oh, okay. Instead of, no, it's got to be out now. You know, like, it would have been very easy for CBS to say, no, you're going to do it, and you're going to do it right away, and you'll fix it in post or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, that's not to say that, you know, they wouldn't have turned out something great if they were under the gun. I mean, we've seen this happen time and again in Star Trek, you know, whether it's Star Trek II or Star Trek VI or Star Trek Beyond, you know? But it's nice for them to have a little breathing room. It's nice, I imagine, especially for the post-production people, the editors and the visual effects guys and stuff to be able to have time to do their thing.
Yeah. The one thing, and I know that this is not a factor, especially for the first season, but I almost wonder if this has a domino effect down the road. Because if they're planning seasons out, you know, release schedules, and this gets bumped back 4 months, does it wind up having any sort of effect on Paramount's release schedule? Because I believe it's supposed to be 6 months between show and movie release in order to, you know, like, does this have any sort of cascading thing? Does this wind up benefiting Star Trek IV ever, you know, because of this? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you think that thing applies going forward, or is that just sort of like a thing to start off where they're like, we're making 3 movies and you can't make a TV show until 6 months after the 3rd movie. But then after that, it's all good and we can just, you know, mix and match wherever we feel like it.
I'd be fascinated to see the contract on that.
Yeah.
To figure that out. I really would.
Yeah. I mean, Fuller has already said that he does not expect there to be any more Discovery past these 13 episodes in 2016. He says, like, if
2017.
In 2017, yes. If and when there is a season 2, it'll be in 2018 at least, right?
Okay. I mean, that's sort of like a grasping at straws thought, I guess. I mean, because there's no way that, you know, a 4-month delay this coming year isn't going to I can't imagine it would be, you know, something where their, you know, their plan for season two has been knocked back. If anything, this could wind up benefiting us by having, you know, Star Trek delivered to us sooner in 2018 than, you know, previously anticipated.
Yeah.
Or seeming sooner, because the end of the first season is closer to the beginning of the second or something like that.
Right, right. I mean, it's very strange, like, the way that all of this works out. I mean, you know, like, Les Moonves was talking about how, because of the sale of the rights internationally to Netflix, the show's already paid for. Like, they've already made their money back on Disco.
That is definitely a change of pace for a Star Trek property.
Yeah, it's nice, right? And I mean, it gives them a lot of freedom, because it's almost like you're guaranteed a season two, unless, you know, the ratings on Netflix are like down the toilet or whatever. Even if CBS All Access flops, you know, in a big bad way,
yeah,
they kind of don't care, because they've already made their money back, and this is their experiment, and if it doesn't work, right, whatever, you know, they course correct for season two, you know?
That's an excellent point. Yeah, I mean, Star Trek finds itself in a, you know, a very winning position for a change.
Yeah.
Which is great, because, I mean, even, you know, everybody knows the story of the original show and the struggles and blah, 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 and all of that stuff, so... My, how times have changed, right? I mean, Enterprise had its own struggles, too, because of all of the ratings and everything.
Oh, yeah, for
and
sure.
And so, you know, if it's already paid for the first season, then they have no reason not to give it a second one.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. This is affecting the production of the show as well a bit, from what I understand. It was originally supposed to start shooting in September, and now they've pushed it back to December. But, you know, whatever. Gives them more time to figure things out. I wonder what this will mean in terms of, like, future announcements. Like, Fuller was saying that we could expect to basically get a whole bunch more info in October. I wonder if that'll move back a bit. But I've got to think that they've already have this show cast, you know?
Unless casting is what made them want to delay.
Maybe.
Maybe they couldn't find quite the right person, or they found the right person and that person said no or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, because, I mean, with Voyager, look at what happened with Voyager.
Yeah. Maybe we have a Janeway situation here. Who knows?
But, you know, do you honestly think they could have kept that secret? Like, that would have broken by now.
I'm shocked that we haven't heard who the cast, like, assuming that it has been cast, shocked that we have not heard. Through some journalist somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll...
We'll just have to strap in and enjoy the ride, as it were.
It's going to be a fun one, right?
Hope so.
Yeah. At least getting there will be fun, you know? I mean, it's exciting.
But you mean getting from there to here?
Yes. Right? Yes. Mm. Yes. Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But it is, you know, it's like one of those things where, like, you know, I'm dying to hear, like, I don't know, it's kind of a backwards thing, but I almost, like, want it to be over with so that, you know, we can then hear what these people have to say about the creation of it, you know?
Yeah, but you know what? I don't know. I'm just so complete. Like, when the news broke, I know that people got upset and everything. Like, I was actually, in a sense, I was kind of happy, because no, seriously, because it's like, you know, like, just coming out of the summer and going into a war. Like, I, in a sense, I'm glad, because this particular hype machine slows down. Like, I can take a breath. I can in a sense, I feel like I can gear up better and sort of like, okay. You know, my palate's going to be completely cleansed going into the next round of news. Like, there's not going to be any residual sort of, you know, summer blockbuster aftertaste or new fall show clouding sort of stuff. Like, I can come into Star Trek clean, man.
We're not going to get a new Star Trek show weeks after a new Star Wars movie.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, yeah, that's... step away from the shadow for a change. Just be like, no, we're our own thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens, you know. But yeah, we'll definitely keep an eye on it. And
you know we will.
Yeah. All right. So should we move on to our feature presentation?
Our feature presentation?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay. So where do we start with this? Okay. You weren't here for our discussion on Sicario and Hell or High Water.
I was not.
I don't know if you listened to that or not.
I did. Of course I did.
Oh, I didn't know because I didn't know if you'd seen the movies and if you'd want to.
I haven't, but I still enjoy the conversation.
Okay. All right. Cool. Well, I appreciate that. So we had Marcelo from the Talk Film Society on for that one.
Thanks again, Marcelo.
Yes. Thank you, Marcelo, as always. And, you know, we were talking about a scene in Hell or High Water in which there's a debate between the quality of Mr. Pibb and Dr. Pepper. And I was talking about how insane it was for anyone to think that Dr. Pepper is better than Mr. Pibb because Mr. Pibb is the nectar of the gods. And Marcella was telling me that, you know, in Texas, Dr. Pepper is king and Mr. Pibb is just sort of a cheap knockoff. And this, more than pretty much anything we've discussed on this show, spawned a pretty extensive debate on the Babel Conference and elsewhere online as to whether or not Dr. Pepper or Mr. Pibb is better and all this other stuff. And just to kind of keep that conversation going, we thought it might be a good idea to look at the Mr. Pibb episode of American Dad.
Yes.
Now, people might say, what does American Dad have to do with Star Trek? Well, a lot, in a sense. American Dad was created by and stars Seth MacFarlane, who appeared on multiple episodes of Enterprise.
Yes, he did.
The reason why is because he's, friends with Brandon Braga, but also a huge Star Trek fan himself.
You may recall that when he hosted the Oscars, regardless of what you thought of the rest of the bit, he actually had William Shatner on in his Kirk persona, talking to him from the future to try to talk him out of the bit you later watched.
He did have that. He also had Ron Jones, I guess, has done music for his shows. Mm. And he talks, I think, on the DVDs of for the Blu-rays for the Next Gen. He talks about how the reason why he hired Ron Jones as composer for his cartoons is because of the Best of Both Worlds Part One, you know, finale.
I can hear it. Yeah, all right, I hear it now. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, he's a huge fan. And then something which to me was blatantly obvious, and then he explicitly stated it, and it made me so happy because every time I said this to people, people looked at me like I was crazy, and I'm like, no, you're crazy because it's really freaking obvious. Ted 2, have you seen Ted 2?
No.
Okay.
At the end of Ted 1, there was a rambling monologue from Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, because he does the narration on that, right?
Yeah.
He's the narrator of Ted 1. Well, Ted 2, he's the narrator as well, but Ted 2 is also, as I've described it and now as he's described it, basically a remake of Measure of a Man, but with a teddy bear instead of a robot.
And from what I understand, it delighted audiences, Mike.
It delighted me. And in addition to that, there are so many Star Trek references in that movie. And Michael Dorn is in that movie.
Wait. Back that up. You're telling me that a Seth MacFarlane work was full of references to something else?
I know. It's bizarre.
I'm a little stunned.
It's bizarre.
A little surprised
by
that.
Did you know, and this blew my mind, and I almost am okay with it because of the cover art, but there is a Ted Flash Gordon 3-pack where it comes with Ted, Ted 2, and Flash Gordon, which normally I would be opposed to, but the artwork has like Ted in like Flash Gordon cosplay, like he's dressed as like Ming or something like that. So I'm like, okay, that's fine then. I guess you can do that. But it's weird.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, regardless of that, it's Ted 2, very much a Star Trek movie. It does the same thing that Star Trek does. It does the same thing that Measure of a Man does and everything, where it takes, instead of it being a science fiction setting, it takes a comedy setting about a talking bear in order to examine, you know, real world issues and everything like that. And you know, it's definitely a commentary on marriage equality and everything. And the more I think about this movie, I've only seen it once, you know, but the more that I think about it, the more I think, like, this movie is amazing and I have to see it again really, really soon. So maybe we can cover Ted 2 at some point in the future as well.
Don't do that to me, Mike.
It's really good.
I kind of have a standing rule that if I didn't like number one, I don't watch the sequel.
Really?
No, I didn't like Ted. I didn't. And what? I'm allowed not to, Mike.
Okay. What did you think about Star Trek the Motion Picture?
What? Okay, you're going to get me in trouble here. All right?
I'm just
Aaron Harvey's going to hunt me down and kill me if I give you my full unvarnished thoughts on Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Okay. So, I mean, what if you applied your rule... Yes. To Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Ah, see, there's a special exception there.
Yeah,
Mike,
okay.
Because I actually saw Star Trek II before I saw Star Trek the Motion Picture. Well, okay, my parents rented Star Trek the Motion Picture, so I saw part of it when I was a little kid.
Oh, yeah.
But the first, no.
If we keep this going, you will have watched all the three cuts of Star Trek the Motion Picture in quick succession. And, you know, no, okay, I'm sorry. I'm not the Joker. You're not Batman. You are not breaking your one rule or whatever. But yeah,
You know what? I like that though. I'm Batman. You're the Joker. Okay. Yeah, that works for me.
Yeah. I don't know. Whatever. Regardless, Ted 2 is amazing. So you should check it out.
Take your word for it.
And my point is that Seth MacFarlane is a big Star Trek fan, but beyond that, he is part of the Star Trek family. He's, you know, a Star Trek actor. He was in Enterprise. And also, by the way, you know, for those Star Trek fans out there, you know, the new show which he's working on is sort of like a comedy version of Star Trek about the not so best ship of the fleet, you know, the sort of like the ragtag group, basically Captain EO, but, you know, without Michael Jackson or 3D, and their journey, you know, through the cosmos.
You're using Captain EO to try to sell this?
Okay. I'm not trying to sell it or not. I'm saying he's doing it. Well, I am trying to sell it because I think it'll be good because, well, for one thing, he's got Jon Favreau directing the pilot, which is exciting. And
That is interesting.
It's pretty impressive. But also, I'm 99.9% positive that Brandon Braga is working on this show.
If there's one thing I've learned to trust in our years together, Mike, it's your hunches about who's working on shows.
Okay. Brandon Braga might not be working on this show, but he says he's working on a show about a crew on a ship traveling through the cosmos, which is very much in keeping with Star Trek. Come on.
There you go.
Come on. It's this show. It is this show. Without a doubt, it's this show. So I can't wait for that. It's going to be exciting. But yeah, so, okay, all that means we're going to be watching this episode of American Dad because it is about Mr. Pibb and a specific moment in Mr. Pibb's history, which is the moment that Mr. Pibb died.
Yes.
So, are you ready?
Yeah. I'm ready. I was born ready for this episode.
Okay, so this is American Dad, Season 2, Episode 12, A.T., The Abusive Terrestrial. It's available on Netflix and various other places, and we are going to start it up. It's because of pausing. I'm at 1 second on the countdown. I don't know where you're at or on the counter.
I'm at 0 seconds.
Okay, so on the count of three, we will start this up. If you are not watching this, don't worry. It'll still make sense to you, unless you haven't seen the episode. But that's okay. So if you're ready, we'll get this started up in 3, 2, 1, start.
All right.
There's the flag. Good morning, USA. There's the guy. Now, okay, are you a fan of this show? Have you seen it? Are you...
You know what? I'm not what you would call a fan, but if it's on when I'm scanning around, I'll stop on it because it's usually good for some pretty solid laughs here and there. Mm-hmm. You know, like the The Langley Falls Post makes me chuckle. I like the little throwaway jokes that they have at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's yeah, there's some funny stuff in here for sure. I haven't seen much of it myself. I've seen the first episode and I've seen this episode. My wife is a big fan, so she's watched a lot of it, you know, had it on, you know, in the background, so I've kind of picked up on things here and there. But this particular episode, it was, I believe, Max who told me about it and lent me the DVD back when it came out, because he's aware of my obsession with Mr. Pibb and was actually sort of involved my life at this particular point in time when this show takes place. And it was weird because watching this episode as someone who lived through these events, I was like, that's not, no, no. And then as it starts going on, I'm like, that's right. That's right. Oh, so they are really doing this, because like the whole time I'm like, they're talking about Mr. Pibb. Well, first off, I'm like, they're talking about Mr. Pibb as if it's a thing that exists. It doesn't exist anymore. It's now Pibb Extra. I'm like, don't they know this? And then they're like saying, like, okay, it's been discontinued, and they're trying to save Mr. Pibb. And I'm like, well, that's cool, but they're still not referencing Pibb Extra at all. And then at the end, spoilers is the big reveal, where they're like, here's Pibb Extra. And I'm like, boom, they did it. So it's just it's a period piece. It takes place in the year 2001. Mr. Pibb, the tagline, I don't know if you caught the tagline there. Yeah. It goes down good.
Yeah.
A little raunchy, maybe.
Yeah.
That's the actual tagline of Mr. Pibb, okay? That's not a joke. That's real, okay?
Yeah. You know, the thing that I love is what I think that they're really hitting hard and hitting well in this episode is that that trope that there's always that one thing that a couple has that keeps them together through the rough times. And the idea that it's Mr. Pibb, that it's a soda, like, is like, it's such a finger in the eye of those old tropes. Like, I just love it. Or the fact that he's given the baby Mr. Pibb. It's just,
yeah, that'll be me. But, yeah, you know, I mean, it's good and it's funny, and I mean, that seems to be something that this show does, which is kind of play with tropes like that. You know, I mean, it does it. This is actually the B plot of the story. The A plot, you know, is like a genre mashup of E.T. and those, you know, Lifetime
movies
of the week, you know, which is very strange. But like this whole thing where he's talking about, I sent you the email, did you get the designs of the Pibb t-shirts, you know, whatever. It's like,
I deleted it immediately.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a thing where like every time I've been to Atlanta, I've gone to the Coca-Cola bottling plant and been like, where do you keep the Mr. Pibb shirts? And they're like, we don't. I'm like, you don't have any Mr. Pibb merchandise? And they're like, well, we have some Mr. Pibb flavored lip gloss. I'm not even making that up. That's a thing.
Wow.
That's all they have. But you might notice that I'm wearing a Mr. Pibb t-shirt right now.
I did notice that.
You might notice, since you see me every week, you might notice that I'm rather frequently wearing this shirt. I don't know, like more so than others, maybe like three times as much as my other
shirts. It's a little more frequent in the rotation, sure.
The reason is because I have three of them.
Ah.
Because when I found out that Target was selling Mr. Pibb t-shirts, I immediately drove to Target and I bought three of them because I knew that I probably would never have the chance again. And I wanted to make sure that I always had them.
Wow. That's dedication. You know, I don't even own, I'm a pretty big Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
And all of my shirts are Solo. So I think you've demonstrated quite a high level of dedication. Now, what is it about
Mr. Pibb? Like Han Solo?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, no, no. What is it about Mr. Pibb?
I'm asking, like, Solo.
No, like, they're all singular.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha, gotcha. I don't multi-buy. Gotcha. Okay, I see what you're saying.
But it's a different sort of thing. What is it about Mr. Pibb that made it work for you? What was it? Was it like Stan and Francine say, where, you know, he's not one of those Dr. Sodas putting on airs?
No, but...
Which I think is one of the best lines in the entire episode.
It is really funny, but, you know, it's... No, but you know what it is it is really sort of like the past connection to it. Like, there is sort of like a Pibb mythology at play, which, you know, I sort of like totally bought into, because of, you know, circumstance more than anything, I think. Like, I was working at a comic book store in high school, which would, this was in, like, let's say 1994, with some people who are I'm still friends with, and my one friend, Josh. Him and his friends, for whatever reason, were really big fans of Mr. Pibb. And it sort of became the stuff of legend because Mr. Pibb is Coca-Cola's response to Dr. Pepper, you know, and yeah. it never took off the way that Dr. Pepper did, of course, because Dr. Pepper was there first. I mean, Mr. Pibb is the Pepsi Dr. Pepper's Coke, you know what I mean?
Which is ironic, considering Coke makes Mr. Pibb and Pepsi makes Dr. Pepper.
Pepsi doesn't make Dr. Pepper, but yes, you're right. Or whatever. It is ironic.
Wait, I thought they did. I thought there were only two soda giants roaming the earth.
No, and this is where the problem comes in, you know, and this is a very important part of the sort of, you know, Pibb history and whatever. Dr. Pepper is its own thing. You know, it became like the Dr. Pepper 7-Up company, right? But Dr. Pepper is its own thing. It actually goes way back, so much so that if you watch Steven Soderbergh's The Nick, they talk about Dr. Pepper's brain tonic. That's actually where the name comes from. It was originally sold as a brain tonic. And when people started tasting it, they were like, oh, let's just, you know, make this like a soft drink instead. But regardless of that, it's old. It's really freaking old. And it's also small, though. Like you're saying, it's not one of the two soda giants. And because of that...
I thought it was.
No, because of that, as it's grown... People like Coke, and I think Pepsi as well, have said, hey, Dr. Pepper, your bottling plants, maybe not the best. Maybe you can't be, you know, making as much Dr. Pepper as you want. So, you know, we will sign, you know, contracts or whatever that in these regions, we will bottle your Dr. Pepper. And in the regions where Coke bottled Dr. Pepper, they had like a sort of a non-compete agreement thing that they would not sell Mr. Pibb, right?
Yeah.
So Chicago was one of those places for the longest time, and my friend Josh would never be able to get it unless he traveled to other parts of the country, and it became like a really big thing. Like, you're going to Wisconsin, bring me back a case of Mr. Pibb, you know, that sort of thing. And I'll never forget the day where his friend comes running into the comic book store with an open can of Mr. Pibb, and he's like, they've got Mr. Pibb at Pan's. And Josh is like, oh my God, oh my God. You know, and it became like this frenzy. And he went and he bought, you know, Mr. Pibb, and he brought it back, yeah. And I tried it, and I'm like, this is really good. You know, all this stuff. And, you know, because of that, it became like a thing, like, oh, they've got Mr. Pibb at this store. Everyone go to that store and buy some, you know? And it was like this thing where you could only get it on certain occasions, you know, kind of like eggnog or whatever.
High holidays?
Yeah, you know?
Okay.
And then it became more prolific and stuff, and it was just like, okay, well, that's become my drink of choice, you know, Mr. Pibb. My friend Josh was, like, really into it. Like, he was making, like, mixed drinks. Like, if you take Mr. Pibb and Jack Daniels, that's an Ice 9, okay?
An Ice 9.
An Ice 9. Nice. You know, Kurt Vonnegut reference, right? And if you don't have Mr. Pibb, you can use Dr. Pepper, but that's not an Ice 9. That's a Fellini, because it's not quite an Ice 9. It's only an 8.5.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's,
Okay.
Well then, that's pretty amazing.
This is sort of the level that Mr. Pibb is sort of like, you know, it had, you know, just sort of squirmed its way into my life. And on Thanksgiving 2001, when Josh, you know, called me up and told me that Mr. Pibb was being discontinued and that they were now going to be making this new drink, Pibb Extra, I got my dad to take me to Jewel on Thanksgiving morning and buy every case of Mr. Pibb that was in the store.
Do you know what my father would have said had I made a request like that?
I can imagine.
Actually, I think it probably would have been more an expression, like an eyebrow going up, and he would have looked at me and just said, no. and like walked away.
I think any other day of the year, my father would have had the same, you know, reaction, but Thanksgiving is his favorite day of the year. Yeah. And I think maybe the spirit overcame him or something.
The spirit of Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Spirit of Thanksgiving.
You know what? I think you've written the script for a Thanksgiving special.
It could be. It would involve also, I think, playing catch with a baseball, because that's another big thing with my dad on Thanksgiving.
Instead of a football?
Yeah. Because
did you guys grow up in America? Come on.
Yes, we did grow up in America, where baseball is the national pastime. So, you know.
Was. Nah. Get out of the way, man. You and your Mr. Pibb and your baseball.
Yeah, not in my household. I can tell you, my dad could not care less about any sport, but will go to a baseball game 365 days a year, given the opportunity. So anyway, regardless of that, so I got Mr. Pibb, and Josh, my friend, did the same thing, so much so that he built furniture out of his Mr. Pibb cases. He had a throne. He had a table. And whereas I drank all of my Mr. Pibb, he had some left over. And I actually have an unopened can of Mr. Pibb over here. But this was a big deal.
You?
What was that?
Does it tempt you some days? Some days it's so rough. It's been a hard day. Mike comes in. He's a little sweaty. Maybe the Illinois weather is a little bit humid, a little bit hot in that summer day. And he walks in and he's just beaten down by life. Life has just really taken its toll on him. He just wants to sit down and he just wants to have the right drink to make him feel better. And you look across and you look and Mike looks across there and he sees Mr. Pibb. Mr. Pibb, in a very soothing tone, says, "Mike, you and me, I can make this right." Is that how it goes some days?
It does go some days like that. Well, it used to anyway, but it was, I think, around 2006 when Josh was having his... I think at that point it was like 7th annual Chillennium, because he called his house the Chill. So then on his New Year's Eve party was Chillennium in you know, 2000, and that continued for years. So it was his Chillennium party in like 2006, and he had a bunch of Pibb left over, which was just like sitting in his closet, and he's like, in a drunken state, mind you, he's like, "I'm gonna make an Ice Nine," and I come in and he's like, "Hey, we made Ice Nines, you want to try one?" And I'm like, "You made it with the 5-year-old Pibb?" And he's like, "Yeah, you know, we just poured it into a glass and stirred it around and now it's fine. You want to try some?" And I'm like, "Do I have a choice?" And he's like, "No." And I tried it and I'm like, "All right, cool, I no longer have that temptation to drink that Mr. Pibb."
You know what? That's like the big box of 1989 Batman cereal that I have sitting in my room right here.
Oh.
Every so often you get a little curious as to whether cereal can hold up for 30 years. And then sometimes, in that part of your brain, you think, "Oh, that Twinkie that was a month past its expiration date didn't work out so well, so maybe I won't have that."
Yeah. It always seems like a good idea, you know? And you open up the pack of cards. Do you chew the bubble gum inside?
You know what? I miss that. But the old poison sharp-edged bubble gum?
Yeah.
I miss that stuff, man. That stuff was awesome.
Which ruined the card on top, you know, and because of the way. Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah.
But here's the thing about it. You know, Pibb Extra comes out. And I remember Pibb Extra coming out, and it came to our region, and we tried it. And here's the thing about Pibb Extra. There was a time where, like, I had not thrown up for like a good 12 years, okay?
This is going to a good place.
And there was one day where I had some Pibb Extra, right? And that day I had, I had fried chicken, I had macaroni and cheese, and I had Pibb Extra. And that night I threw up. And the only thing that I threw up was Pibb Extra.
So the chicken and the mac and cheese ganged up, and they're like, "You're not real Mr. Pibb. Get out of here."
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of my experience with Pibb Extra. However, I will say they've since introduced Pibb Zero, which is their diet thing.
Yeah.
It tastes more like Mr. Pibb than Pibb Extra does. So I think that the lesson to be learned with Mr. Pibb is that less is more.
Okay.
Zero.
Well, all right, then.
Zero instead of extra.
Okay. Zero instead of extra.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow, that's a lot of dedication to Mr. Pibb. I remember enjoying the soda, but I'm going to be honest with you that when it comes to soda, I'm not extremely picky.
Yeah,
like I think I've tried every variation of diet soda in existence.
Yeah,
including diet Mountain Dew Code Red or whatever, and diet Dr. Pepper Cherry Vanilla, and I was of the philosophy for many years that the more words that were on the label, the better the drink was.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those things where I think, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I think I still gravitate towards like Pibb Zero is like when I made the choice to switch from regular soda to diet soda, there was like a month. It was in like May of 2005. I remember this because episode 3 was coming out where I tried one of each to try to find a diet thing that I liked. And the one that came closest to, you know, being the real thing was Pibb Zero or Diet Dr. Pepper, it might have been. And then Pibb Zero was available. So
Diet Dr. Pepper is a pretty solid choice. And Coke Zero doesn't taste like Coke, but I do like it.
It's pretty close, yeah. You know, and I feel like such a poser because here, like I went to Jewel on my way home from work today to get Pibb Zero.
Yeah.
And they didn't have any.
Oh, you must have had flashbacks.
I was like, oh, it figures. And so as a bitter twist of fate, I ended up buying Diet Dr. Pepper, which is what I have here now. So I'm drinking Diet Dr. Pepper while watching this American Dad episode, which we're not talking about.
Not really, no.
And, you know, I apologize for that, but whatever.
Don't apologize for that, because pretty much the only thing that we can say about the A storyline on this is that you have to really get the joke that what they're making fun of is the Lifetime movies.
Yes.
Not the tragic situation that those Lifetime movies are about. Like, if you don't plug into that joke, this episode really falls flat. Like, you have to get those Lifetime jokes. Like, Lifetime movies are nuts.
I will say this about Seth MacFarlane stuff that I've seen, and I haven't seen a lot of it, but it really does not take its audience for granted. It goes out on a limb and pushes a lot of buttons, and lots of times there is like a message behind what it's saying, and it assumes that the viewer has the intelligence to pick up on that message without having it being, you know, sort of like spoon-fed to them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with you. As quote unquote dumb as the episode can seem, it works on a different level. The show that I always hold up as a shining example of that cartoon show actually is Beavis and Butthead.
Mm-hmm.
Because Beavis and Butthead, a lot of people dismissed it. My wife still, you know, makes fun of me for having been a fan of it. And I'm like, no, you had to get the joke.
Yeah.
Like it was there. Trust me. Mike Judge is a smart guy. And he was giving a wink to everybody out there. Mm-hmm. And trusting that you were going to go along for the ride.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can totally see that, you know, and I can see that here in this stuff too. It walks a very, very fine line and can very easily fall into like offensive territory. And I think also sometimes there are jokes which he throws in just to be funny, which are rather offensive, you know, but whatever, you know, I mean, that's his thing. And, you know, nobody's perfect and whatever, you know. But I think for the most part, there's more than meets the eye to his stuff, you know.
I agree. And the thing that I love is this is sort of a classic Roger the Alien episode, because whenever he has a storyline, he's always a victim in some way of something that's going on, and then the resolution is always Roger just figuring out that there was an easy out for him the whole time. Either he's stronger than the person that's, you know, terrorizing him, or he outsmarted himself. And like, there was one where he got so deep into a role that he forgot who he was. And then the other persona, like, it was this whole thing where Roger was playing like 6 different roles, and each one was like an adversary of the other and everything. So that's what I like about these Roger episodes is, or these storylines, I should say, is at the end of it, it's always Roger realizing, oh, wait, for me, there was an easy solution to this, and he gets out of it, whatever it is.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I haven't seen enough to be familiar with it, but he does seem like my favorite character on the show. He seems like the person I would want to hang out with.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, he's, you know, it's interesting because he's like the, you know, the Brian character. If anybody watches Family Guy, you know, he's the zany animal character that gets away with things because he's not human in the context of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. It's funny, you know? And yeah. I know that we haven't talked about a lot about this, but the reason why, you know, I brought up that whole history of Pib for whoever is interested is because they do it here. They do it for real. At one point, they're like, what if we sign a petition? And the whole thing is they're trying to get signatures for this petition. That petition existed, okay? It was a real thing. It didn't work. I signed it.
Obviously.
Yes. It's no longer up there. But, you know, we tried. We tried and we failed.
It's the inception point for ideas like change.org.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yes. And this was on one of those sites which, you know, no one cared about and has since folded because I looked for it. I found like dead links to it. Because yeah. there's a website, I think it's called pibthug.com, which is all about Mr. Pib. It hasn't been updated since 2011, but there's a lot of history of Mr. Pib on there and everything, and a lot of like artwork and stuff, because that was one of the things, I think, too, which was so appealing about it, was like the graphics on the cans and everything were so cool and inventive, you know, and the tagline, put it in your head, you know, like the later tagline, you know, after the one, yeah, the original.
It goes down good. That was the real tagline?
It goes down good. In fact, when they were making these shirts that I have, they were also making shirts with that as well. So yeah, it's that was the real tagline for sure. Can't make this stuff up. Anyway, so I know that we completely went off on a tangent there, and you know, whatever, forgive us, but you know, I think we had, in addition to some history on Mr. Pib, which may or may not be interesting to people at all, you know, we got some good Seth MacFarlane stuff in there too, which I think is interesting. Now,
I mean, honestly, I think that anybody coming into Stage 9 needs to be prepared for the fact that we talk about some esoteric stuff
sure.
sometimes. And I think that the Mr. Pib history is like, it's like the untold chapter of something that, you know, it's cool. Like, I learned something on this episode. And that's what we pride ourselves on Stage 9.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it was entertaining. And whether or not it was on topic, I've always thought that doesn't really matter as long as what you're talking about is somewhat interesting. I'm sure some people will say, well, guess what, guys? It wasn't. But you
know
what?
This was very, you know what? Honestly, I've been podcasting with you for however many years now. And this was a special story that I've never heard before, and I enjoyed taking this tour through your life, Mike.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that, and I enjoyed, you know, sharing this portion of my life with you and the listeners.
And as Cybok says, gain strength from the sharing.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's been fun talking about Mr. Pib and American Dad today, but that's not all we're talking about this week on Trek FM. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
You know, Pushing Daisies and Hannibal are two very different shows, but they both have a very strong visual look and a very strong storytelling style and a point of view. And one is quirky, and one is darkly quirky, and one is whimsically quirky.
Literary Treks.
She just does such amazing things with these characters, and it just consistently blows me away how invested I am in Chakotay's life decisions. I never ever thought that I would care two whits about what Chakotay does with his life, but I'm really invested here. You know, I really care about the decisions he's making and what's going to become of him in the future.
The 602 Club.
But now by the third one, you've got this really difficult task of, like every sequel has, you've got to be the same but different. And you've got to build on the success of that character that has been so cemented now by two movies. So the little things that started to show up in the first two movies, the quips, the cool clothes, all of this stuff is exponentially blown up onto a much, much bigger scale in this movie.
Saturday Morning Trek.
And all these things just brought in more and more people who thought they were alone, and they found each other, and they made their clubs, and then they made conventions. And that's what the 70s were about, was getting Star Trek back and finding each other.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and discover what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and all the rest of it. We have to thank our associate producers, Jeff Sutter, Chris Steftenagel, and Norman C. Lau. Thank you very much for your support.
Thank you, everybody.
We couldn't do it without you. So if you want to be like Jeff and Chris and Norm, you can help us out by donating over on patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. And if you go there, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks we have for you. So be sure to check out all that stuff. It's at patreon.com/trekfm. If you want to contact us, you can find the network on Twitter at TrekFM, or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. And Facebook is also where you'll find our listener forum, the Babel Conference. Just type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, or go to our website, and there'll be a link over there. John, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, you can find me over hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. Available on iTunes. You can find me co-hosting Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast, over on the Nerd Party with Trek FM's own Matthew Rushing. And look for the username Kessel Junkie, like Tom Joad's ghost. I'm out there roaming. Where can people find you, Mike?
You can find me right here on Trek FM, producing From There to Here, which is our daily rewatch of Star Trek. And you can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K. And we will be back next week, perhaps with a bit more focused conversation, on the final score by Star Trek II and III composer James Horner for the new movie, which comes out today, The Magnificent Seven.